New York, the talk of New York. 4:15, it's Friday afternoon, and here they are, Bob and Ray.
And thank you, Roger, and hello again, everybody. And let's see, it's a beautiful day here, and a little chilly, though, for the
did you hear, Dr. Bob says we might see some snow flurries in the area? I don't think in the city, but why do you say that? Maybe outside, huh?
I don't know. We'll be talking to Dr. Bob a little later anyway. Maybe in about, 50 minutes or so?
Yeah, half hour. Regular Friday report. We got a lot of good features today.
Let's see.
We'll get right to the first one, I guess, right away.
We wish to thank the Bay State Band Instrument Company, makers of Old Colony Clam Chowder Concentrate, for relinquishing its time in order that the following public service feature may be brought to you.
And right now, our Bob and Ray Psychological Laboratories invite you to discover whether you are a presidential timber or not.
Now, without realizing it, friends, you may be grubbing along in some mundane job when you really have all of the qualifications to be president.
Maybe you've never even considered throwing your hat in the ring because you weren't too sure you'd know what to do when you got to the White House.
Well, now, your days of uncertainty can be over because the Bob and Ray Psychological Laboratories have devised a simple 10-question test which will enable you to learn, you know, whether you have what it takes to be president.
Now just get pencils and paper and be ready to jot down a yes or no answer to each of the questions that we have. Here we go. Question one, does it seem as if there aren't as many cast iron lawn animals in your neighborhood as they used to be?
Two, were you fully grown before you realized that Seattle is not the capital of the state of Washington?
Three, are you firmly convinced that all of the state highway departments are engaged in a conspiracy to get you lost?
Four, have you ever stopped to think what rough sledding you'd have if everybody else in the world spoke Chinese?
Five, would you get panicky if you came home some evening to find your house under 10 feet of water?
And six, when riding in an elevator, do you have an overpowering urge to press the emergency button just to see what would happen?
Seven, can you get police calls on your television set?
Eight, doesn't it seem strange that you've never seen or never met personally anybody from Madagascar?
Nine, do you find it's easier to crawl in and out the window of your car than to enter through the door?
And ten, does it seem to you that your neighborhood movie theater has been showing the same cartoon for years?
Okay, friends, now add up the yes and no answers on your sheet.
Now, if you answered yes to no more than three of the questions, it probably would be safe for you to run for president. But be sure you stick with one of the minor parties. We'd certainly not want to see you get elected, right?
All right. If your reply was yes to more than three but fewer than seven of the questions, you better confine your political activities to wearing campaign buttons and marching in torchlight parades.
And if you had seven or more yeses on your list, you're not even qualified to vote, much less hold office.
There are a number of presidential training courses for those of you who find yourself in the danger zone.
And we're not allowed, of course, to mention any of these on the air, even though there is a Bob and Ray executive course, which may be obtained by dialing our unlisted phone number here in New York.
We also have unlisted phone numbers in all major cities.
And we wish to thank the Bay State Band Instrument Company, makers of Old Colony Clam Chowder Concentrate, for relinquishing their time so that this public service feature could be heard. The Old Colony Early Evening News, usually heard at this time, will not be heard today.
Mary Backstage, Noble Wife, the story of America's favorite family of the Footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. At La Scala Opera House in Milan, Mary and Harry are nearing the finale of their debut in La Traviata. And as a rapt audience listens, we hear Mary as Violetta.
Ma io, ricordo, ma io!
take our bows.
I can't get up. I can't get up.
There goes the curtain.
I heard my gown rip and something snapped.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of my wife, Mary. Thank you. Stand up, Mary.
I can't move. I can't move. But I fell in my... the final scene there, I ripped my gown and I felt something snap.
Thank you. Well, thank them anyway.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for your kind attention.
Mary, get up, Mary.
I can't get up.
I thought for a minute you'd taken my advice to break a leg.
I don't think it's funny. It's nothing to laugh at.
Look out for that curtain.
Oh. Well, can't seem to get it all the way to the floor.
Up about a foot. Oh, the people can see still.
Terribly embarrassing.
Well, it's just terrible. I'm lying on the stage and they can still see me. Drop
Greg,
that curtain.
Greg, can't you get them to lower the curtain?
It's as far as it'll go. It's about a foot short.
Well, let's just leave the stage then.
Boy, this is too bad. Hey, they should have a longer curtain here.
Come on, Mary. I'll drag you off stage.
Be careful.
And so the curtain comes down on our friend's first performance in La Traviata at La Scala. Will there be more performances? Sure, and join us on Monday when we'll hear Calvin say...
Then you mean that's the end of our opera career?
That's Monday in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking. How about a little bit of a selection at the WOR studio organ?
Be delighted to. Now that baseball has returned, I ought to play Take Me Out of the Ball Game today.
Can you?
I'll play it later for you.
What are you going to do now?
Well, listen.
Mr. Mitchell, we finished your muffler job, but before we look over to Bill, I sort of want to explain. You see, when we got under your car, we ran into some...
Not problem.
Jimmy, tell Mr. Mitchell how bad that muffler was.
Very bad.
It's not going to run more than you said.
And the tailpipe, huh?
Very bad.
But the price you gave me over the phone...
Oh, that was before we got a look at that connector pipe, right, Jimmy?
Very bad.
And the bill?
Very, very bad.
Anybody will be glad to give you a price quote, but at Midas, we give you the price quote that sticks. It's our Midas free written estimate. Before we ever lift a wrench in your car, we show you on paper exactly what parts you'll need and exactly what it will cost. And the finished job will never cost you one penny more. At Midas, we haven't just been building business for 20 years. We've been building trust. Come to Midas. We're specialists. We have to do a better job.
There are over 50 local Midas shops in the New York metropolitan area, including northern New Jersey, Long Island, Westchester, Rockland, Orange, and southern Connecticut. Consult the Yellow Pages for the shop nearest you. And now the Auburn Motor Company, maker of fine cars up to, but not including 1938, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, the heartwarming story of a girl who refuses to let misfortune interfere with her search for even greater unhappiness. As we look in on the Bessinger household today,
Edna is rearranging her mushroom plants in the downstairs library. It's early evening, and Dr. Depwaller, the leading optician in the village, is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, Optician Depwaller. I'm glad you're able to come so soon after I let out a howl on the telephone. I do hope I didn't take you away from something more interesting, like reading your eye chart.
No, I don't bring the eye chart home from the office with me in the evening, Miss Bessinger. In fact, I wasn't doing anything very important at all when you phoned. My wife and I were just watching Kojak on television.
Well, I don't see how watching a thing like that could test your eyes as accurately as reading the chart. After all, Kojak's head is so distinctive that you could identify him even if you weren't able to see the rest of the picture clearly.
Well, I wasn't watching television to test my eyes, Miss Bessinger. I was just doing it for amusement.
Well, I suppose we all need to relax with something like that after a busy day. I know I often work crossword puzzles in the evening. It helps me get away from it all after I put in a hard 8 hours playing solitaire.
Yes, I suppose even a recluse like yourself needs a little variety in life.
Well, I really don't consider myself a recluse. I get out of the house quite often to putter in the garden or sprinkle the lawn. That's why I had that high brick wall built around the property, so I could go out without having the neighbors see me.
Well, I think it was having that wall built that caused people in the village to start calling you a recluse. In fact, the children have heard so many stories about this house, they're afraid to come in the yard after their ball if they hit it over your fence.
Yes, I guess that's true, and I'm just tickled pink about it. I can pick up so many of the children's balls in the yard now that I never have to buy any new toys for the cat.
Well, I wouldn't think you'd want to get a reputation for being a weirdo just to save money on cat toys, Miss Bessinger. But in any event, I don't imagine that's what you call me over here to talk about.
No, you're certainly right enough about that, leading village optician Depwaller. I've been in a complete tizzy ever since it got dark this evening. I seem to have developed a very acute case of night blindness. I can see all right here in the house, but looking out the window, why, I can't even make out the shapes of the trees and the shrubbery in the yard. And those things are always quite clear at night before I was stricken.
Well, I don't really think you've been stricken with anything at all, Miss Bessinger. It's pitch black in that yard. Apparently the streetlight in front of the house is burned out.
Oh, by Jiminy, I do believe you're right, leading village optician Depwaller. It normally shines right over the wall and brightens up the whole yard. But it's just not there tonight. My stars, you can't imagine what a relief it is to know that I won't have to go on a steady diet of raw carrots to get my night vision back. Why, I suddenly feel as if I'm no longer standing in...
Gathering dust.
What?
Gathering.
The gathering dust.
Can it be that Edna may at last step through the doorway to happiness, safe in the knowledge that her problem is municipal rather than visual? Or will it only lead to further heartbreak when she realizes that a burned-out streetlight is an open invitation to prowlers? Join us next time when Edna may be forced to put up her outdoor Christmas lighting early in the gathering dusk.
Okay, here on the ground, good news. No delays reported to us as of this hour. It's about 11 minutes before 5 now. And in a little while, we'll be checking with Dr. Bob Harris, who will give us the weather for the weekend. And now, if we could have those trumpets... Like that?
Is that enough, Ray? Or
that's
you
great.
Want some
more? No, that's plenty. That's a good attention getter.
Okay.
For this announcement we have here. You know, WOR has been the talk in New York for over 50 years. But now we're adding eyes to our ears, and we need your help. We're looking for 12 of the best, most positive pictures of New York City. And we're awarding a brand new Canon FTB camera to each of the 12 photographers who sent us their original picture. Now, just send your favorite picture of New York, one that you have taken, to Picture Contest, Box 710, New York 10036. And a panel of judges will pick the 12 best and then award a new Canon FTB camera to each of the winners. Photos can be new or one that you've had in your collection for years, but it must be original and must have been taken by the contest entrant. Now, the photos will be judged on the basis of their positive nature, composition, and content. And all entries must be in Box 710 by 9 a.m. Monday, May 10th. And winners will be announced on WOR and notified by mail. All photos become the property of WOR and will not be returned. They will be used in a special advertising campaign to support our belief in New York City. So send your entry to Picture Contest, Box 710, New York 10036. Complete rules are available at WOR.
And it's just 5:10 and time that we pick up the phone and say hello to our resident meteorologist, Dr. Bob Harris. Hello, Dr. Bob Harris. And welcome now to our newest Bob and Ray feature, The Hobby Hut. And we'd like to welcome Mr. Hobby himself, who will have a guest to talk with, the editor of Wasting Time magazine, Neil Clummer. Welcome to the show again, Neil.
Well, thanks very much. I've really been a big fan of you guys for years, Ray. It's a real thrill.
No, I'm Bob. I'm Bob.
Oh, thanks. Well, I never paid much attention to which you guys was which. I'm usually cataloging my collection of obsolete razor blades when you're on the air, so I only listen with half an ear. But it's a real thrill to take time out from my more important work to appear with you regularly. And I think I have a very interesting guest for your audience to meet today.
Well, I noticed that gentleman unpacking albums of some kind over in the corner, so why don't you just go right ahead and introduce him, huh?
Fine. I wish you'd do that. Now, I'd like to introduce all of you listeners to the dedicated hobbyist who's going to be sharing his leisure time interest with us today. He's Mr. Gordon Blightwood of Kearney, Nebraska. And I wonder if, into this microphone, if you'd tell us what's in these beautifully bound albums that you've brought to the studio with you, sir.
Yes, most assuredly. I never get tired of showing these off to anybody who's interested in seeing them. For 30 years now, my life's been completely wrapped up in collecting meatloaf.
Well, that sounds like a fascinating hobby. Certainly a most unusual one, Mr. Blightwood. Are all these albums filled with different recipes for meatloaf that you've picked up over the years?
I don't just collect the recipes, Neil. As I indicated, I collect meatloaf. And I have thin slices of more than 800 varieties mounted in these albums. See, I arranged this system for mounting and preserving myself.
I see that each album page has several openings where slices of meatloaf can be inserted. And then there's clear plastic over the front and back.
Yes, and so you can observe the meat from either side without touching the specimens. And, of course, the space underneath for labeling. I had to design all this myself because there aren't any ready-made albums for meatloaf collections on the market yet.
Well, I'm sure that'll all change as the hobby gains in popularity.
I'm hoping someone will devise a cooling system for each album page. I keep my collection in the refrigerator at home, but when I take it out for display at hobby shows, some of the meatloaf starts to get a little gamey.
Yes, I was noticing that this slice here on the first page is covered with a thick layer of mold.
That specimen is almost 60 years old, Neil. It's from a large meatloaf served at the White House during the administration of Woodrow Wilson. Oh. And that's the last remaining slice known to exist.
Well, I'm sure it must be the only one left. 60 years would be a long time for anyone else to keep part of a meatloaf.
Of course, that's the real challenge. So many varieties are presumed to be extinct. History speaks of meatloaf made of wild pigs being eaten by the Prussians in the 17th century. But I've prowled through hundreds of antique shops in Europe, and I can't find any of it left.
Well, it's a shame to think of such a priceless collector's item being lost forever. But I guess with something that perishable, it could all disappear in 300 years.
Well, I'm afraid that's what's happened. Now, this slice right here is the oldest piece in my collection. It's venison meatloaf made on the American frontier around 1840. I found it under the floor of a cabin that had been burned by the Indians.
You really have an old specimen, all right. Looks like a brown rock.
Yes. Of course, all the moisture goes out of meatloaf after a few years, and I'm just lucky this didn't crumble into little scraps. A lot of specimens that aren't put in albums do that.
Well, I know all those pearls must have had to the thrill of finding a well-preserved slice. You say you have over 800 in your collection?
Well, most of them aren't too old or valuable. When I first started collecting, I just hung around the homes of celebrities and went through their garbage. The meatloaf specimens I picked up there don't have much resale value, but I found it was a good way to fill my first album without spending a lot of money.
Well, I can see it's a fascinating hobby, whether you're on a limited budget or have great wealth, Mr. Blightwood. And I want to thank you for sharing your collection with us today.
It's all right.
Now, our time is about up, and we'll be looking into another interesting leisure time activity when we meet again soon.
Off the air now?
Not yet. In the Hobby Hut. Until then, this is Neil Clummer, urging you all to have a good day and to find a good hobby.
You know how Italians turn plain spaghetti into something extraordinary? Once again, that 5 o'clock reading in Times Square, 49 degrees. Top stories in the news at this hour, the House of Representatives in an overwhelming vote approved a strong weapons spending bill late this afternoon. Total money involved, $3 and a third billion. Secretary of State Kissinger says terms of a tentative Soviet-U.S. treaty on peaceful nuclear blasts will allow Soviet and American inspectors to go directly to test sites. And the Agriculture Department says a dry spell in the southern Great Plains has reduced this year's winter wheat crop by more than 48 million bushels, but it believes there will be enough for domestic consumption and export. An adventure tale of ghostly pirates and sunken treasure on tonight's WOR Mystery Theater presentation of Fool's Gold, following Fulton Lewis at 7 o'clock. Next scheduled news at 5:30 on WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York. Now more of Bob and Radio New York.
And again today, our scouts have been searching the railroad and bus terminals around town for victims of hard luck. We always like to let them pour out their stories of misfortune for your listening pleasure. And then, of course, our generous Bob and Ray organization rushes in to lend a helping hand to each figure. Bob, I assume that our first hardship case of the day seated there beside you right now. Is that
yes,
right?
That's true, Ray. This is Mr. Conrad Humaker of Charleston, West Virginia. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yes.
I understand that your story is one of blazing romance that can only be fulfilled by finding transportation to the jungles of northern Paraguay.
Well, that's right, and I must say that you put it very dramatically. See, I joined a worldwide pen pal club here several years ago, and I was given the address of a young lady who belongs to a lost tribe of headhunters in the Paraguayan jungle. So we started writing back and forth and discovered that we have a lot in common. That's why I want to go down there and make her my wife.
Well, it's truly a story of romance, Mr. Humaker. But if this young lady belongs to a lost tribe that lives in the remote jungle, how did the Pen Pal Club get her name in the first place?
Well, she wrote in and asked to join the same as I did. The chief of her tribe gave her a choice of being thrown into a volcano or trying to land a rich husband. So she chose trying to land a rich husband. But that's hard to do down there without getting a pen pal. I understand the richest guy in that part of the jungle only has about 45 cents in cash.
Well, and I'm sure you must seem quite wealthy by comparison.
Oh, I got almost $20, but that's not enough to get to Paraguay.
Well, your worries are over, Mr. Humaker, because our generous Bob and Ray organization wants to present you with this fine 3-speed power lawnmower from Jerome's of Milwaukee. It can be set for mowing, clipping, or edging just with a flick of the switch there.
Wow. I hope it can be set for clearing underbrush in the jungle. I don't have any use at all for a lawnmower.
No, thank us. We're glad you like it.
Yes.
Now, with today's next hard luck story, we have a lady, Mrs. Tilly Weedbach of Emporia, Kansas. Ms. Weedbach, I understand you spent your small savings on a trip here to New York in the futile hope that you could launch a profitable business here.
Yes, I'd been planning on it for a long time. You see, back at Emporia, people are always going around from door to door leaving little samples of products for you to try out. Sure. 1 week it'll be soap powder, next week shaving lotion, all that sort of thing.
And you hope to establish a business in New York passing out free samples door to door, is that it?
Well, no, that's not all of it, no.
Then you want to finish the story in your own words?
If I may, yes. I'd prefer to do it
way. Go right ahead.
You see, most of the samples back home were just left on people's doorsteps while they were at work. So I'd hurry around the neighborhood and gather up as many as I could before the people got home. Mm-hmm. And by the time I came to New York, I'd gathered up around 30,000 items, everything from chicken soup mix to oven cleaner. And I figured I could make a bundle here because so many people live in small apartments. And I was sure they'd pay plenty for little tiny packages of things that don't take up much room.
Well, that all seems very logical.
Well, it does, until you stop to realize that they pass out free samples of the same products here. So people would have to have rocks in their heads to buy them from me.
Yes, I guess that would make you seem like nothing more than a thief and a scrounger who'd come here hoping to make a fast buck.
Yes.
But anyway, we want you to have this lovely gift, a pair of genuine sterling silver cufflinks decorated with the initials JL.
Well, of course, those aren't my initials, but since women don't wear cufflinks anyway, I suppose that's immaterial.
Now, with our final hard luck story, here's Mr. Toby Borgstrom of St. Paul, Minnesota. You came here hoping to stage a theatrical production, sir, is that right?
Well, yes, sort of. You see, my folks come from Iceland.
Well, our hearts go out to you, sir.
Well, I don't know why, based on what I've told you so far, but to continue the story, I noticed how some people made a lot of money off American folk music concerts in Nashville and places like that.
Mm-hmm.
They even get big crowds for Polish folk music in Milwaukee and Latin American music in Los Angeles. So I figured all I had to do was to find a place where a lot of people of Icelandic descent live, and then I could stage concerts and maybe even get them on TV.
That seems reasonable. I didn't know there were many people of Icelandic descent living here in New York.
York, though?
Well, I figure there are at least 200 of them, which is more than I found in Salt Lake City and Indianapolis put together. So I tried to sell the people at Madison Square Garden on the idea of letting me stage a grand old Icelandic Opry there every Saturday night. But they want me to put down a $50,000 deposit, and I've only sold three tickets at $2 each, so I'm a little short.
Well, lack of money should never prevent a good idea from becoming a reality, and our generous Bob and Ray organization wants to present you with this tiki torch for dressing up your backyard luau.
Oh, I'll hold these backyard luaus.
Well, we thought you'd like it, and now back over to Ray at our main anchor desk.
And now we've come to music time on this edition of the Old Bob and Ray Show. And so, for your afternoon listening pleasure, we now go direct to the exclusive Blazing Hills Country Club, just outside Grosse Pointe, Michigan, for the haunting melodies of Walden Inkler and his society orchestra.
Buddy Blodgett speaking from the exclusive amethyst room of the exclusive Blazing Hills Country Club, where the wealthy and the near wealthy gather each afternoon to enjoy the haunting melodies of Walden Inkler and his society orchestra. We're going to be chatting with the maestro momentarily. I see he's straightening his cummerbund and stepping back onto the podium. So here for your listening pleasure is the ever-haunting anniversary waltz as rendered in the Walden Inkler style. Yes, sir, the anniversary waltz with Walden Inkler and his society orchestra. Now Walden has made his way over to join me here at the microphone. First, Walden, I might comment on the musical changes that appear to have been made in the society orchestra during this present engagement. The brass and string sections don't play anymore, do they, at all?
Well, no, they don't, buddy. When we were booked in here at the exclusive Blazing Hills Country Club, it was with the strict understanding that nobody would play but the drummer, and I agree to do that. As you may know, society orchestras like mine, excuse me, I almost dropped my glasses, have gone through some hard times during the recent recession.
Uh-huh.
And we're taking any booking we can get right now.
Well, I'm sure this engagement is turning out to be a memorable one for aficionados of the drum solo throughout the Detroit area, Walden.
Well, I hope so, buddy. But, of course, I can't claim much personal credit if this is turning out to be a memorable engagement. That isn't even the regular drummer who plays with my orchestra up there.
Well, I wasn't sure about that. The dark glasses and the way he has that felt hat pulled down make it kind of hard to tell who you have there on the drums, but he appears to be a rising star in the music world. What's his name, Walden?
I don't really know, buddy. While I was negotiating to do this gig, some of the officers here at the country club blindfolded me and took me in the trunk of their car to meet him. And they just introduced him to me as Drummer Boy Lagonda.
Well, speaking as a music aficionado, that name doesn't ring a bell, Walden. Of course, we've all heard of the notorious Dominic Lagonda.
No, I've never heard of anybody like that. I don't want to hear about him.
Well, I was just going to comment for our listening audience that Dominic Lagonda is known to get a lot of enjoyment out of pounding on things. So I suppose playing the drums would be a natural diversion for someone like that.
Well, now, look, I don't care about this guy, whoever he is. All I know is that the musicians in my society orchestra are getting paid double for just sitting there and promising not to louse up the drum solos. That's
well,
all.
It's interesting the management here at Blazing Hills Country Club can afford to pay so well for entertainment. I was noticing as I drove in today, it's the only country club I've ever seen without a golf course. Doesn't that seem unusual to you?
No, it's not unusual. They have a lot of business meeting here, and it's mostly older men who come. They wouldn't care about golf.
They prefer sitting around listening to drum solos, is that
it? Well, I guess. A couple of times I've heard Drummer Boy Lagonda tell them to sit down and listen to the music, and they always sit down and listen like he tells them to.
I see. Well, let me ask you a question.
Excuse me, buddy. Drummer Boy is snapping his fingers now and signaling for me to go back up there at the podium. I gotta go, really.
Okay. Well, we've been chatting with famed orchestra conductor Walden Inkler, and now as the maestro again picks up his baton, let's listen to the haunting strains of Walden Inkler and his society orchestra as they ask the musical question, Holiday for Strings. ¶¶
Well, I see our time is just about up. So from the exclusive Amethyst Room of the exclusive Blazing Hills Country Club, just outside Grosse Pointe, Michigan, this is Buddy Blodgett, bidding you a bit of a fond farewell, returning you to our New York studios.
Okay, here on the ground, Fred, still, it's a pretty remarkable Friday. We've had no delays on the trains or subways. Pretty good day, all in all.
And we will have our big scoop award right after this.
Green Point Savings Bank makes a point of serving you.
Once again, George, and make that earnings bank instead of savings bank.
Green Point Earnings Bank makes a point of serving you.
Which is it, Green Point Savings Bank or Green Point Earnings Bank?
Leave them both in. Try it.
Savings Bank, Earnings Bank. Yes, Green Point is both. Most important, Green Point is a service bank, making a big point of serving your personal financial needs. Savings accounts, time deposit accounts, home improvement loans, mortgage loans, individual and self-employed retirement accounts, even life insurance. Get them all at Green Point offices in Brooklyn, Flushing, and Levittown. What you get at the Green Point is service, and that's the point.
Okay, George, hit it again.
Green Point Savings Bank, your neighborhood earnings bank. Green Point Earnings Bank, your neighborhood savings bank.
Member FDIC.
And we welcome you again to the Big Scoop, the program that pays tribute to the outstanding accomplishments of the nation's working newspapermen. And here at our news desk, prepared to tell you about this week's Big Scoop Award, is our Big Scoop editor, Big Fred Scoop.
Thank you, Norman, and welcome to the Big Scoop. This week's handsome award, suitable for framing, together with a certified check for $15, goes to Emil G. Clute, a star financial reporter for the Logansport, Indiana Daily Bonfire. It was just last summer that Emil Clute started work on the story that was destined to become his Big Scoop. He was preparing to leave work for the day on August 23rd, 1975, when his editor approached him.
I hope you're not in a hurry to leave for the day, Clute, because you're going to have to write this stock market roundup all over again. Look at this copy you put on my desk. It's typed backwards somehow.
Oh, I think I can explain how that happened, Chief. You see, I discovered there was no ribbon in my typewriter, but I figured I could use the machine anyway if I inserted carbon paper and gave you the second copy. Only I guess I got the carbon in backwards.
Clute, I can't imagine how a dumbbell like you ever got a job on this paper in the first place. In the past few weeks, your stupidity seems to have gotten even worse. Is there something on your mind?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there is, Chief. I think I'm standing right on the brink of uncovering my big scoop. There's a stockbroker here in town who supplies me with a lot of my financial news. And recently, he's been advising me to buy the stock of a local company when it's on the way up and then sell it on the way down.
Well, a lot of speculators do that, so where's your news story?
Well, I noticed that when I follow this guy's advice, I keep buying the stock at $80 a share and selling it at 50 cents. Now, that's happened 5 times in less than a month, and I've lost my life savings. I think the broker is manipulating the price of this stock for his own personal gain, Chief.
Well, that's a serious charge, Clute. Besides, anybody can make a bad investment, especially a nincompoop like you. Why not forget your suspicions before you get into serious trouble?
Sorry, Chief, I can't do that. Thousands of little people just like me could fall for the same swindle. And if our free enterprise system is to work, we have to play fair and square. It's my duty as a working newspaper man to see that we all do that. I'm honor bound.
And so Emil Clute began the complex job of proving that financial juggling had caused the price of one stock to fluctuate for the personal benefit of a few insiders. First, he went to the president of the company whose securities were involved.
Hey, Mac, have you noticed how the stock of this outfit's gone up and down like a yo-yo? Or are you too busy lining your pockets to read the financial page?
Are you rotten little punk?
Next, Clute chatted with a young brokerage clerk.
I've been wondering how much they pay you to tip off their pals to sell this stock just before it's due to take another big dive.
Are you miserable pipsqueak?
Finally, Clute went directly to the broker he suspected of running the whole price manipulation racket.
Buddy boy, I think you're into a little swindle here that could cause you to get 10 years on the slammer. Any comment for the press?
You insufferable little wretch.
armed with the facts, Cloutier returned to meet again with his editor.
I was right, Chief. Few people are making millions at the expense of honest investors. They're running the price of this stock up or down whenever they feel like it. And I got the documents to prove it.
Good work, Cloutier. Go write your story.
Chief, you got to be kidding. I told you I got the documents to prove my charge, so naturally the crooks are cutting me in on the swindle, assuming I never tell a soul how the racket works. So I guess you better go find yourself a new financial editor. I'm retiring right this minute.
And so it was that Emil Cloutier used his knowledge of economics and his skill as a reporter to build his low-paying job into a lucrative new career. His rapid advancement has resulted in his being chosen to receive this week's Big Scoop Award. It's inscribed to Emil Cloutier, a hard-working reporter, generous tycoon, and a man whose story we've been honored to tell on The Big Scoop.
President Ford in Texas campaign swing promises major narcotics crackdown. The editor for the news at 6, Walter Troy Spencer, Roger Skibina, substituting for Lyle Vann over WOR New York at 6:15. Have a good weekend, everyone, including you, Bob, and you, Ray.
The makers of Einbinder Flypaper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of 3 generations, invite you to ride with the man of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., are the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we keep our raincoats in the back seat, other times we don't. Either way, we're always on the lookout for trouble. The other evening, we just gotten back into the squad car after taking our dinner break, when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., turned to me and said,
I sure wish that waitress would have given me another refill on my cup of coffee, Sam.
You had 4 cups as it was, Ralph R. Jr.
Well, that's the whole point, Sam. My budget allows me 5 cents a cup for coffee. So now that it's gone up to a quarter a cup, I have to get more free refills. It's the only way to beat inflation.
Yeah, I guess you're right enough about that. What if you don't want 5 cups of coffee?
Well, that can't be helped, Sam. Same way with chewing gum. I don't like to chew it after the flavor's gone, but at 7.6 for a dime, I have to. It's the only way to beat inflation.
Yeah, I guess you're right enough about that.
Anybody can figure it out with simple arithmetic, Sam. See, getting a suit clean costs 30% more now, so I just wear mine, you know, dirty 30% longer. It's the only way to beat inflation.
Yeah, you sure got some neat ways to beat inflation, all right.
Car 119, calling car 119, a prowler hiding in the shrubbery at 6824 West Havenhurst. A prowler at 6824 Havenhurst.
Prowler at 6824 Havenhurst, huh?
That's us, Sam. Let's roll.
I don't know whether we ought to, Ralph R. Kruger, Jr. This windshield's gotten so fogged up, I can't see through it.
You need to wipe it off with a rag, Sam. But we used our only rag to clean the dipstick after we checked the oil yesterday.
Yeah, I know. And it's bad wiping off a windshield with an oily rag. Glass gets smeared so you can't see through it.
Yeah, wiping off glass with an oily rag's no good, Sam. Why don't you try getting out of the car for a few minutes, and then you'll stop breathing on the windshield, making it fog up.
Well, why should I be the one who has to get out of the car, Ralph R. Jr.? You're sitting in here breathing on the windshield, too.
Well, I'm only breathing on the passenger side, Sam. You're breathing on the driver's side. And that's the part that gives you trouble when it fogs up.
Well, I don't think that's the way it works, Ralph R. Kruger, Jr. I think it's the two of us breathing in here that fogs up the whole windshield. So why don't we both get out for a few minutes?
No, really, Sam, I don't need to. I'm only breathing over here on the passenger side.
Yeah, but some of your breath is hitting the windshield on this side.
Car 119, car 119, disregard that call to investigate a prowler hiding in the shrubbery at 6824 West Havenhurst. The case has been handled by the man of Squad Car 44. The suspect has been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial.
And while we wait to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's news of the big one-cent sale now in progress at your Einbinder flypaper dealer. Purchase any strip of Einbinder at the regular price and get a second one for only a penny more. How about that for great news, especially if you live in a big two-room apartment where a single strip of flypaper just doesn't do the job. Now you can clear hordes of flying insects out of both of your rooms, and for only a penny more than you're accustomed to paying. But when you visit your local flypaper store, be sure to ask for genuine Einbinder, the brand you've gradually grown to trust over the course of 3 generations.
That prowler found hiding in the shrubbery at 6824 West Havenhurst was convicted on 1 count of prowling and 5 counts of trampling the shrubbery.
He's now serving the first of six consecutive life terms in the state penitentiary at San Quentin.
And so another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night.
Again today, we have dipped into the petty cash to bring the central figures in some recent newspaper feature stories here to New York. And they're going to tell us how the events that skyrocketed them into the news finally came out.
It's hard to say, isn't it? Skyrocketed.
It's not an easy word.
No.
It's tough.
We do this as a public service because the newspapers never seem to tell us how those little one- and two-paragraph feature stories finally are concluded. The items just appear once, and that's the last we ever see of them. So here to satisfy our curiosity, as well as yours, we hope, are three very special guests. The first one coming up to our microphone is Mr. Homer D. Watkus of Muncie, Indiana. And I think it was the Associated Press that carried your story, sir, wasn't it?
Yes. Originally, they just put it in one of their regional reports for newspapers out in Indiana.
Uh-huh.
But then I guess they decided my story was filled with so much drama and pathos. Is that how you say that word, or pathos?
Sure.
That it deserved to make the National Wire.
All the elements of drama certainly were there, Mr. Watkus. You lived under the cloud of having a dishonorable discharge from the Army for almost 30 years. And finally, after many appeals, the Pentagon admitted that there had been a mistake.
That's right. My old commanding officer in World War II got me mixed up with another Homer Watkus in his outfit, and it was the other one who had punched him in the mouth and was supposed to get the dishonorable discharge. But it took me 30 years of fighting through red tape to clear my good name.
Well, that certainly was a tribute to your determination, as the AP story indicated. But then there was never any follow-up printed to tell us how erasing that blot from your record has affected your life.
Well, it hasn't affected it much. You see, I got to thinking how much trouble my old CO had caused by getting me mixed up with whoever punched him in the mouth.
Uh-huh.
And it made me so mad that I looked him up and really did punch him in the mouth. So that caused the Army to give me another dishonorable discharge on account of my old CO is now a major general.
Well, I could see how he'd use his position to fix your wagon again, but we do want to thank you anyway for coming here to tell us the conclusion of your story.
Sure.
I hope you've had a good time.
I've been put up
at the Bob and Ray Hotel and all that.
Yes.
A little change for you. Our next feature story, follow-up, is here in the person of Mrs. Lou Ann Barnheiser of Silver Springs, Maryland. It was the UPI that carried an item about you, wasn't it, ma'am?
Yes, and I understand that it was picked up by 453 newspapers coast to coast. I guess it's always a matter of interest when a person moves into a house and discovers a secret door to a hidden room.
Oh, it certainly is. We see things like that in the movies, but it's not too often you hear of such a discovery in real life. According to the UPI story, you found that secret door behind the refrigerator shortly after you moved into the house.
That's right. I was dusting there and felt the doorknob with my hand, so I moved the refrigerator out of the way and then opened the door to find a whole room full of furniture and other valuables.
Well, there's no telling how long those things had all been there, unseen by human eyes. But, of course, we never heard how your story came out. So have you done anything with all the stuff you found in that hidden room?
Well, not exactly. Originally, I decided to sell it, but it only carried out a couple of loads when I went back and found the policeman there in the room.
Oh.
As it turned out, the place wasn't a secret chamber in my house at all. It was the living room of the neighbors next door. So now I'm facing a burglary rap.
I'm sorry to hear that, but thanks for taking your last few days of freedom to come here and satisfying our curiosity. Let's move to our final feature story follow-up today. We have little Tommy Burchison of Zanesville, Ohio with us. Tommy, your heartwarming story told of how you beat out hundreds of other applicants to become bat boy for the Zanesville baseball team in order to help support your widowed mother.
Well, gosh, she's not really a widow, Bob and Ray. She just caught my old man with lipstick on his collar once too often and gave him the old heave-ho.
Well, we don't want to get into your family's domestic problems, Tommy.
We'd
just like to hear whether you made good as bat boy after you had impressed the team owner enough to hire you.
Yeah, but making good wasn't too hard. You see, my mom owns the team, and she got it in the divorce settlement from the old man.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Now, that may also explain why I was hired for the job over all those other applicants.
It certainly might. I wonder why the news service never mentioned in its feature story that your mother owned the team.
Well, I don't think the publicity man for the ball club ever mentioned it. So when the news reporter found out who I really was later, he probably felt like a fool for being taken in.
Probably.
He just dropped the whole thing.
Seems like the logical explanation. Tommy, I want to thank you and all of you other guests, too, for joining us today. You helped make our Friday and our week, telling us how your feature stories came out.
Down the corridor, the Bob and Ray guards have fallen in, and tonight they have Met baseball caps and they're carrying Louisville Sluggers. Before they cross the drawbridge, let's have this word from the Five Borough Buick Company.
Here come the Bob and Ray uniformed guard, and as Mr. Lomax pointed out, they are wearing baseball caps today and carrying baseball bats.
Right, and you'll soon be hearing the Bob and Ray midget to sing our closing song. We would like to thank our staff for their help this week, our producer, director, Bob Tiley, of course, and our engineers, Herb Squire, Barney Beck, Cornell Brown, Joe Janice, and Ron Sims, and Janet McIntyre for technical assistance on the Merry Backstage episodes this week.
So have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday at 4:15. Until then, Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get work.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
Out! Who comes there?
He!
Who's came?
What
came? An old well.
That's caught the cage. By the center. Quick,
box.
Goodbye, goodbye. I wish you all a last goodbye.
This is WOR New York, an RKO general station.